חלשינג פור חלס? Want to buy or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9 Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. for Essen Fressen, where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, or Boba Shah, some like to call me. And we have got a show full of recipes lined up for you. So if you'd like to go and get your paper, pen, or you can listen to this afterwards on the podcast on High FM site. We'll be chatting Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, and all the upcoming holidays. But I'll also be interviewing Denise Phillips, who is a Peru Leith trained chef from the UK, who during the 1990s ran a very successful catering company. But since 2000, she has focused on cookery writing and running a popular cookery school in the UK. And she's going to be sharing some passionate recipes we'll be chatting about all the things that Denise is up to at the moment. But a little bit more about that later. In the meantime, I have to start off with an incredible recipe that I had at a friend of mine who said it's an adaptation of a recipe from Yotam Ottolenghi. So I thought it would be lovely for Rosh Hashanah. So here goes. So I'm getting straight into sharing my first recipe with you. And that is for a chopped salad with tahini and tahina, as we call it, and za'atar. So you can serve this as a side to any of the meat dishes. And you will need 6 ripe plum tomatoes, or in tomatoes that you actually love. And she used baby tomatoes, all those lovely different shaped tomatoes that you can get. You need about 6 to 8 of those, depending on how many people you're having. I would say about 6 of those mini Israeli cucumbers, chopped up, diced, a red pepper, de-seeded and diced, about 4 or 5 spring onions, thinly sliced, about 15-20 grams of coriander, roughly chopped, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 3 tablespoons of olive oil. You can add feta, but we didn't add it because we kept it parve. You'll need 4 tablespoons of tahina and 2 teaspoons of za'atar spice. And as Yotam says, he says adding tahina to an otherwise familiar tomato and cucumber salad can be a real game changer. So you need to start off with, obviously, with a nice brand of tahina. I would suggest Salad Farm or Friends Bakery do a lovely tahina, which is really lovely and creamy and nutty. And then what we do is we slice up the tomatoes and I put them in a sieve. You can put them in a colander just to drain the excess water off. Leave it for about 20 minutes and then allow some of the liquid to drain away. And then you place the tomatoes in a large bowl. And the drained liquid you can either put back into the salad dressing if you want to. Then you add the cucumbers, the peppers, the spring onions, the coriander, lemon juice and oil, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You mix it all to combine it all together. And when you're ready to serve it, you transfer the salad to a serving bowl. Add the feta if you're using a feta. Pour the tahina on top and finish with za'atar as your final sprinkle and a little bit more salt. And it is delicious. And you just eat this with challah and raisins and all the honey if you want, and it's great.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to bry or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. We are talking Rosh Hashanah, and we're going to be chatting a little later to Denise Phillips in the UK. But for the moment, we are going to be talking a bit about brisket. Now, I always search for something different for brisket. And somehow I always go back to the same old recipe. But a most important thing to remember with brisket is that you need to cook it low and slow. And brisket is obviously the preferred cut of meat for Rosh Hashanah. It's easy in that you can add a lot of vegetables to it so it can go further. We add potatoes, you can add carrots, prunes on Rosh Hashanah, whatever you feel like. Add that to your brisket and somehow that seems to work and enables you to go a little bit further with that meat. But because we only get the best cuts of meat and kosher, we're going to get a decent piece of brisket. And don't be frightened of the fat. The fat gives it the most wonderful flavor. It helps to tenderize it. It keeps it soft. So often I buy a piece without any fat and it's just too dry. Anyway, we're going to cook it low and slow. We're going to have a layer of fat on top. And it doesn't matter what part of the brisket you buy. You can get that flat piece or you can get the piece with a little bit of a hump, an extra piece on the side, which is your more fatty piece. But it's delicious. Trust me on this one. Size-wise, we normally say raw meat, 4 people to a kilo. Cooked meat, like your cold cuts and whatever, 8 people to a kilo. So that should give you a good idea as to how much you will need, how many people you're having, are they children, adults, whatever. Remember that kosher meat is quite salty, so be careful, don't go too overboard with the salt. Remember that if you're using a pickled brisket, wash it first to get all that brine taste off it. And then try and keep your brisket immersed in some kind of sauce. Whether you're going to use a crock pot, a pressure cooker, or roast it in the oven, remember that it has to be low and slow. Remember that also meat shrinks. So don't have too big a roasting pan because all the sauce is going to evaporate. Remember, if it's folded in or scrunched in a little bit, don't worry because it does shrink, as you know. If you don't have a pan with a lid, make sure that you normally put 2 layers of foil on top of it to really keep it nice and airtight. I also love to make my brisket beforehand, allow it to cool, then I slice it up, put it back in the sauce, and I put it in the fridge or in the freezer so that it's already done and all you have to do is warm it up. That's the best way to do it, I find. Have it cooked, mine's already in the freezer, sliced and cooked and ready to be served. Takes that extra pressure off. I wonder if my brisket's going to be okay. You know it's okay. It's been cooked, it's in the freezer, and it's almost ready to go. Another thing that we have to remember is that when we slice brisket, it has to be sliced against the grain and with a very, very sharp, high-quality, good knife so that you don't tear it when you're cutting it. Cut it into nice, even slices. And now I'm going to give you the recipe that seems to work for us. You will need 4 large onions, a 3-kilo piece of brisket, and for the sauce, which is very important, you will need 1 cup of brown sugar, or if you want to, you can do 1/2 cup of brown sugar and 1/2 cup of honey, which is lovely for Rosh Hashanah. You will need 4 heaped tablespoons of onion soup mix powder, 2 tablespoons of ready-made mustard or 1 tablespoon of mustard powder. You will need 1/2 cup of tomato puree, 1 cup of tomato sauce, 2 teaspoons of paprika, 1 can of ginger ale, 6 cloves of garlic, 1 heaped teaspoon of salt. Now what you do is you place the brisket onto the raw onions and you combine the other ingredients in a bowl. And then you pour the sauce over the meat and cover it with a double layer of tin foil to ensure that the tin foil fits it tightly. You place it in the middle rack of the oven and you cook it on low, I'd say at about 150, for at least 6 hours. And then the brisket obviously must not be on the bone. And what you do is you test it by sticking a fork in, and if there's no resistance, your brisket should be ready. And then what I do is let it cool a little bit. I then slice it up and I put it into a serving dish and then I freeze it. And what you can do is when you defrost it, you'll see that a layer of fat will sort of build up on the top of the meat. Just peel that off. And you'll have lovely juice underneath it. Don't forget, you must pour the sauce back over the meat once you've sliced it with your sharp knife. And then you just reheat it when you're ready to serve. So on lowish heat, I would say about 170, warm it through. And there's your brisket. Now, what you can add to it is, which I've done quite successfully, is baby carrots. I've added baby onions as well. I've added potatoes. You can add all that. So the onions do seem to disintegrate, the ones that you've sliced already, the four large onions that you had to cut in half and then slice into rings. They do disintegrate a little bit because of the low and slow cooking. Coming up after the break, I'll be chatting to Denise Phillips in the UK. She is a Pruleith trained chef, and she has been sharing her passion for food for over 25 years and is known for her modern adaptations to some of the more classical recipes by placing new twists on old favourites. Denise has authored many cookbooks, has a live cooking show almost every Friday morning, and does personalized cooking classes, hosts Date on a Plate, which is a great success, which she'll chat about coming up, and has a number of weekly columns in the secular and Jewish press, both in the UK and in America. So let's chat to Denise after the break.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome to the show, Denise. It's lovely to have you. And and the first thing, of course, that I'm sure is on everybody wants to know is, what drew you into cooking, and how did your Jewish background shape that journey?
I am the youngest of 4 girls, and my mother, bless her, coming up for 95, is still a very good cook, a very good family style sort of cooking. And I just think when you're in a family where they all cook, I teach my own kids, it's like the Shema, you should teach it to your children. And through the process of just absorbing and learning, I learned the basics from my mother. And very passionate about it. And what drew me to do it, a friend of mine said to me, she went off to Pruleith Cookery School. I'm sure you know Pruleith.
Yes, sure.
Food and Wine. And she said to me, because I was already working in advertising and marketing on Fleet Street, and yes, she said to me, why don't you come and work for me? She'd gone to she was starting out a cookery business, catering, and she said, why don't you work for me? So I said, no, I'm not going to work for you. I'm going to work with you. So off I went. I gave my notice in with what I was doing. Very good job. And I went off to cookery school and I passed my exams. And we are still very good friends. And we started our catering company together about 18 months later. So that's how it all started.
And was it only kosher catering at the time?
Well, it's kosher.
Kosher style.
I couldn't get a license because I didn't ask for a license.
Yes.
Because we were working from home.
Yes.
So you can't have a shoma sitting in your kitchen. I do have a shoma sometimes every now and again coming in.
Yes.
But that wasn't about the kosher element. It was just the practicality of cooking from home. It's okay if you go to premises, a shoma can work from the premise, but not from home. It was too complicated, and that's how that worked.
Right. So you
stopped the business.
Yes.
Three years down the line, we both then had children, and it was just too busy. And then the recipes and a lot of the things that I was making went into the first cookbook, and I've now written 7.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so, I mean, I would say that the biggest influence, obviously, was your mom and your sisters. Are your sisters, do they cook or do they help you, or are they...
They don't help me, but they are sisters and they enjoy cooking. I mean,
yes.
I even have a twin sister and, you know, we're all very different. And as I say, we all enjoy cooking because we like home cooking. I think if you've been brought up with home cooking, I mean, it was just one of those things when my kids went off to school and when they went back to someone's house, they'd never had tin soup before. They didn't even know what Heinz tomato soup was. I mean, no, what's that? You know, didn't even know because I'd never bought it.
Yes. So how would you balance, I mean, you are a very creative cook. I've watched your shows many times. And how would you, do you balance tradition with creativity in your cooking?
Well, it's using the elements and with a twist. So I've got some new recipes coming up. So one of the things from Rosh Hashanah, I've made a toasted challah and honey ice cream. You know, it depends on what time of year. What ingredients have we got? What do we want to use to cook with symbolism, cook the, you know, spirituality, that making it more meaningful. So I will take particular ingredients and think about what's trending. So, of course, I mean, I'm doing a honey date cake. I've got new recipes, fig and apple biscuits. And whiskey honey cake. I wrote that one when for my community at Northwood. They're big whiskey lovers. So I thought, you know what? Let's put whiskey in my honey cake. And it was divine. It's being, I think, bold, creative. You know, sometimes they say from the biggest mistakes comes the greatest creation.
Exactly. So, do you have a favorite example of a dish with a history that resonates with you? Is there something that you really love making and you're passionate about, sort of every Friday night, let's say?
I think my family love my challah.
Yes.
More than anything else. I mean, I have recipes that I, and this is where I am creative. I love to plait and twist and decorate the challah for ever. Reason around the Jewish calendar, or even when, you know, my kids got married, we plaited it with hearts, and you know, come the Rosh Hashanah, it'd be creative ways of the circles and how to plait. So I think they enjoy that, and that's a continuous way of being different but still creating the tradition and adding the blessings and the symbolism of challah on a Friday night. Night's not the same without chicken soup, so it will always be chicken soup. The desserts will vary, main course will vary, but I know that you're passionate about brisket, so I am fully aware of that one. And my son-in-law, we've even named one of the recipes as Benny's Briskets. His name is Ben, and he loves brisket, and it's become Benny's Brisket. And the recipe is actually a pulled brisket dish, and it is actually marinated with spices, so paprika, coriander, and cinnamon. And I marinate that overnight, and then I pan fry it to seal all the spices. And then I cook it with red wine and stock, covered for 4 to 6 hours at least. The secret of it all is just make sure that there's enough liquid around the meat.
Right.
And then it just pulls, you just pull it apart with two forks, and I decorate it with lots of fresh herbs, parsley and mint, and top it with pomegranates.
Oh, how delicious. Well, we'll have to try that recipe. We'll have to try that.
My website, if anybody wants
okay,
to.
Okay, so what's your website called?
Jewishcookery.com, so quite easy to find, and all the details to search for recipes, it will all come up. So if you put brisket or beef, the recipes will come up.
Right. And I mean, I know you do many, many things, and you're a lady of many talents, but one of the most fascinating that I really wanted to hear about was date on a plate. Tell us about date on a plate.
Date on a plate, the recipe for romance. What it is. It is events for Jewish singles. I have been doing this over 23 years with huge success.
Oh,
it's
really?
Online since COVID, is the way we do it. So the in-person is an hour's cookery class followed by a gourmet dinner, and the themes will change. So we've just had the Rosh Hashanah favourites, and it is for six men and six women. They cook together for an hour. Each person introduces themselves. Hello, my name is, that's what we do. We cook together as a group. No cooking experience is required. And then the food that we created, we eat in the dining room. The men move round after each course, which makes it more interesting. You know, you're not stuck with one person. At the very end, I share the email addresses of everyone that attends. So that is the in-person and the online. And this is like speed dating. Yes. It is an opportunity to meet six men or six women, and often more, maybe seven and seven. And using Zoom and breakout rooms, so really all you have to do is click on the link, and the breakout rooms I facilitate, and so that one lady will chat to one man in the breakout room. You get 6 minutes, the timer goes to 5 minutes, you get a minute notification that you will be returning to the main Zoom gallery, and we then repeat. And at the end, I share the emails, and it's a fun way from the comfort of your home. It is fun. It is safe.
Yes.
And it's, and more than that, it is safe, and it works. So with all these online dating, no scams, you actually chat to the person, you can see the person, none of these photographs that are 10 years old, which people seem to share, or they aren't the person they say they are. I chat. I pick up the phone to every single person that books in, whether it's online or in person, to just double check they say who they are, that and they are Jewish.
Right. And is it, can South Africans also go onto the Zoom as well?
Yes. Why not? They can.
Yes.
They certainly can. But just so that they know, most people are from the UK, but there's a lot of South Africans here. And I also find that a lot of people are happy to travel. I think the world is a lot smaller. They have relatives here. It's an opportunity to come and visit.
Of course.
And so connecting people near and far, which is what it is in fact doing, which is wonderful, because they'll probably know all the people in their vicinity, but who knows, romance travels.
Yes, sure. And do you break it down into different age groups, obviously?
Yes.
Okay.
So coming off on the 17th of September, it's an online, it's just an hour, 7:30 to 8:30. We've got the 25 to 35s. On the 19th of October is the 45 to 55s. But I facilitate from age 25 to 75 with a 10-year age gap. So there's always an opportunity. I mean, the same age group doesn't come up all the time, perhaps every 3 months. But don't forget, there's the in-person and the online going on all the time.
Right. And what kind of meals would you prepare at these dinners? Would they be, obviously not something low and slow cooking, it would probably, what would it be?
So I'll do some, the canapes, so I made it all hummus cups, in flavors of pastry and hummus and roasted chickpea on top. We had frittata. These are the canapes that I made, and they made a fresh salmon and smoked salmon pate. They also made round challahs. This was last Sunday. For Yontif, I made, as my special recipe for schnitzel and triple baked chips, they made the dressings with Israeli salad, and then they had honey date cake, and I did spaghetti fours, which is the delicious
my favourite
apple biscuits. Right, so that was a new recipe which I was making. So they do an hour's cooking, so I'm weigh up a lot of the ingredients. But it's about the interaction, mingling. They're not all there for the cooking, believe it or not. They might be there for the eating, but they're not all there for the cooking. But it's fun. And sometimes, in a really nice way, the more incompetent they are, the more entertaining it is.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's really good.
Now, the Friday mornings that sometimes attend, how do we log on to that? How would our listeners...
I make life easy. All you have to do is connect to my Facebook group, Denise Phillips, and request to be my friend. And then, once you're my friend, you will see it. You'll get a notification that Denise is going live. And what this is every Friday, unless it's Yontif, or for whatever reason I'm away, I do... at 10 o'clock, and it'll be your time, 11. And yes. I do a cookery demonstration of something. So this Friday, I am making a lemon, honey, and blueberry cake with a lemon dress icing on top. And it really doesn't matter if you don't click on at 10. It is there. It is recorded, so you can press... Because it's recorded, you can, you know, connect when it suits you. So I know a lot of people, by the end of the... weekend, I can see 2,000-3,000 people seen it because they've seen it in their own time. It is shared with over 60 to maybe 70 Facebook groups, and people, you know, respond accordingly.
Wow, amazing. So any shidduchs, have you organized any marriages through this date on a plate?
Loads. So let's just be this is how I met my husband. We're becoming, actually tomorrow will be really exciting, our 21st wedding anniversary. So yes, we have people. So when you talk about weddings and shidduchs, it's more than that, because what it means, after every event, people have met new friends.
Yes,
people connect. Sure. Some are dating. We have people now that are partners. We have people that live together. We have people that are married, and we also have people that have date on a plate babies.
Oh, so lovely!
Over 24 years I've been doing this.
Wow!
Yes,
that's amazing.
So that is how it happens, and I always say, you know, you never know what will happen. People should come open-minded.
Yes.
Ticking boxes, you know, online and dating agencies, they all have their place. But I just feel that you really need to meet someone face-to-face or chat to the person who's online. You need to chat to them. Opposites attract. You know, your romance is not about your date of birth. People might just enjoy their company, and you have a good conversation, that's your starting point. And give people a chance. You know, the first time you meet someone, they might be really nervous.
Yeah, sure. So now, I've had the pleasure of meeting a couple of new young Jewish chefs, which really gets me excited, and spoke to a few of them. And I just wanted to know what advice you would give to young Jewish people who want to become chefs, not necessarily kosher chefs, but just chefs. Just what advice do you have for them?
Well, it depends where they want to work, but I would make sure you were trained. I mean, if they're chefs, where have they learned their skills from? And it is really tough out there, but I would be constantly looking on what social media, following TikTok, following Instagram, because you're going to see the latest trends. It depends what kind of chef you want to be. Are you going to be a chef on a cruise ship, or are you going to be a chef in an old people's home or a latest restaurant? What does that actually mean? Or are you going to go into catering? It is different. It is such a skill that it's so versatile. I mean, I did catering when I first started, and then went on to cookery classes. So completely different. And I do obviously do a lot of social media. So I would just keep yourself on trend and try new things all the time, because this is the future, the latest technology, and keep reading, keep watching, because if you're out of date, you're passé.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Denise, they're waving to me. Time is up. Thank you so much for joining me. It was wonderful chatting to you.
Thank you very much, Mbaji. I want to wish everybody a very sweet, happy and healthy new year. Best wishes, Denise.
Thank you for joining me, Denise. Bye-bye.
Halashing for halas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and I hope that you've been enjoying my interview with Denise Phillips in the UK, who has some exciting little programs on the go. So without further ado, let me get cracking, get straight into special things and different things to make for Rosh Hashanah, to make the night a little different. So we can start off with red apples. This is for table decoration, by the way. You core some red apples, and you can actually stick little flowers into the section with that you've cored, and they should last the night. They will absorb the juice from the apples. You can also core it and then make it a little bit wider, and you can put either a tea light candle into it, or you can actually put a longer candle in. Just make the section where you've cored it a little bit wider. Also, before you put it on the table, make sure that it's straight at the bottom. Otherwise, you'll have wobbly apples and wax flying everywhere. You can also take a beautiful clear vase and fill that with apples. Always looks very pretty. If you want to, you can put a bit of water in, and you can put a little arrangement of flowers on the top. Fresh leaves. I find fresh leaves, you can cut them and keep them in a bucket of water and put them on the table. Just fresh leaves that won't go limp. And then scatter some red apples every now and then. And you can actually put some lovely little candles as apple and cinnamon candles. They really are lovely on the table. And just throw that into the mix along the length of the table. And if you really want to get the kids involved as well, and the children love this, because what child doesn't like to show off something that he's made or she's made? So if you want, you can get some plain biscuits. I know that Orit makes a frozen roll of biscuit dough, and you just slice them and bake them and let the kids ice them in pink or white, and just throw some pomegranate seeds on top. Or, you know, just get them involved. One other thing that I love doing for Rosh Hashanah is I make a streusel topping for my challahs. So I plait them and I egg wash them, and then I sprinkle some streusel topping on top, which is made up as follows. 4 tablespoons of softened cardamom or plant butter, whatever you want to use, it's paru. 1/2 cup of flour, 1/4 cup of brown sugar, and about a teaspoon of cinnamon. And you just mix that all together with your fingers and just sprinkle it on top of your challahs. You can, of course, add some apple if you want to, just before plaiting, or rolling it, because we're meant to have round challahs for Rosh Hashanah. Just put a couple of pieces in between sort of the layers of the challah. Of course, there's nothing better than a marshmallow head of fish, because if you like me and if you like the rest of my family, you're not going to enjoy a cooked head. at the top of your, a cooked head of fish at the top of your table. So we're very lucky we can get beautiful marshmallow heads and just put that on a platter at the top of the table with some dates and some pomegranates and some, all the little simanim for Rosh Hashanah. I want to try and quickly share a wonderful ginger cake that never lets me down on Rosh Hashanah, and it's so easy to make. You're mixing the wet and the dry ingredients together. You can use a strong whisk, you can use an electric beater, whatever you want, but all you need is 3.5 cups of flour, a tablespoon, yes, that's 3 teaspoons of baking powder. It's normally 1 teaspoon of baking powder to a cup of flour. So we're using 3 teaspoons here because we're using 3.5 cups of flour and 1 teaspoon of baking powder. 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 4 teaspoons of ground cinnamon, and 1 teaspoon of ginger. You can use a little bit of ground allspice if you haven't got it. Okay, doesn't matter. Then you'll need, this is now your wet ingredients. So we put all the dry ingredients into one bowl. Your flour, your baking powder, your baking soda, your salt, cinnamon, ginger, allspice. And then in the other bowl, you're going to put 1 cup of vegetable oil, 1 cup of honey, 1.5 cups of sugar, and 1/2 cup of brown sugar. Yes, it's sweet cake, but that's what it's all about. It's about sweetness. 3 eggs, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract or vanilla essence, 1 cup of strong tea. So you just let it brew and get nice and strong. Remove the tea bag, and you'll also need 3/4 cup of fresh orange juice. And then what you do, as I say, you put the dry ingredients in one bowl and then you make a little well in the middle with your hands and you beat up all the wet ingredients and you add the wet ingredients to the dry ingredients and you mix it really well and form a thick batter. Now, it's quite a loose batter, but don't worry, it's still delicious. You may have to cook it a little bit longer if you're using a Bunton. I would say about 55 minutes. But if you're using 2 loaf tins, then you would cook it for about 40 to 45 minutes each one. I just love this cake, this honey cake, because it's so easy and it stays moist. And it's actually one of those cakes that you could serve as a dessert as well. You know, add a little bit of ice cream or some powder of cream to it, put some glacé cherries or some glacé ginger on top, and it's terrific. Well, the time has certainly gone by quickly, so it's time for me to say goodbye until next year. Wishing you all a wonderful year ahead, a healthy year, and please God, may all our hostages be returned and may we only see peace and happiness for all. Wishing you a Shana Tova Umituka.